All right, everybody, welcome into the Final Football Podcast. We are privileged to have you back on board. We have a long slate tonight, just all kinds of things to get to. One quick bit of news that we'll hit. We'll have a pretty solid Super Bowl preview, not crazy in depth, but solid. And then we've got all kinds of awards to hand out tonight. We tried to really think through it on our own as individuals and then put the votes together. So we'll have that coming up as well. Simon Short is joining us as usual. So is Ronan Summers, as always. Simon, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Ben. It was a rousing Pro Bowl weekend. I couldn't take my eyes off of. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm lying. Yeah, Pro Bowl weekend happened. I heard someone told me, the internet told me. But I'm great. Thanks, Ben. How are you?
I'm good. Excited to have everybody back on with us. Thank you all for listening. Ronan, how are you tonight?
I'm phenomenal, Ben. You know, kind of similar to last week. I'm starting to dread this as we're getting closer to the Super Bowl. I know. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. I know. But you know, I've got to let people know that it's coming. You know, before you know, we get past the Super Bowl, and then all hope is lost.
Yeah, I'm already thinking it. I'm right there with you, Ronan. Ronan, we know Simon really didn't watch the Pro Bowl at all. Did you catch any of it this past weekend?
You know, I caught a little bit of it, and I'll tell you what, I appreciate the effort that they're putting into it. I think they're on the right track. I don't think it was perfect this year, but I do think they're on the right track. You don't want to see guys go out there and go 50% and then see like the one guy going like 90% and just blowing by everybody, and then everybody on social media gets mad, and then, you know, the guy gets hate for trying to play good in a Pro Bowl, right? So cross all that out and add in the mini games. I thought it was relatively enjoyable.
I will say the mini games, I plan on going back onto YouTube or wherever I can find like a stream version of it. Maybe I'll do that tonight. But I do always enjoy seeing the mini games, whether it's new ones that they've added just to see if they're good or not. And sometimes they're not. But I always enjoy going back and looking at those. So I'll probably go check that out at least.
Yeah, I agree. I would really rather just see them eliminate them. I would rather see them turn the flag football game into a game for retired guys, not active players, because these guys are already worried about getting hurt anyway. So let's bring in Chad Johnson. Let's bring in Brett Favre. Let's bring them in back for a hardcore flag football game. If they get hurt, who cares, right? I mean, you know, there's no money riding on it, right?
You're going to have to back up the Brinks trip for Favre.
Somebody, not anybody playing against them. Somebody is waiting to put a lick on that guy, that's for sure right now.
All right. Well, I think that's enough Pro Bowl talk for now. I don't want them to obliterate everything, but I do wish they would kind of get rid of the game for the active players and then just turn it into a really fun event, for everybody, really. So let's talk about the Super Bowl. That is happening too. I hear next week. So,
with Jiro Evero, what happened?
You know what? I just flat forgot it. I got so distracted by all this sexy Pro Bowl talk that I just forgot all about the Evero hiring.
The only reason I'm here tonight to talk about Jiro Evero. What are we doing, Ben? Come on.
Okay. I'm sorry. So,
gosh.
All right. Simon's right. There was a hiring this week, and the Panthers did bring in Ejiro Evero as the defensive coordinator for them, which was the role he had in Denver. Simon, I'll give you first crack at it since you brought it up. I don't feel like talking about it. Go ahead.
I actually don't have anything to say. No, okay. Ejiro Evero, I'm really excited. I'm really, you know, we dreamcasted D'Amico Ryans getting this head coaching job months ago because we wanted to see what a high-level, young, exciting, aggressive, defensive-minded coach could do with some of the defensive stars on this team. Brian Burns, J.C. Horn, for example. And we didn't get that, and that was disappointing. It's going to be interesting to see Frank Reich kind of come in and see if he can solve this quarterback situation, this offense situation. But we kind of got almost the next best thing in terms of we didn't get the defensive-minded head coach, but we got a really high-level defensive coordinator that's in the same vein, young, aggressive, has had a lot of success on the defensive side of the ball in recent years. And Evero's a guy that's touted as, you know, a future head coach sooner rather than later. So I think this is still going to get us a lot of what we want in Carolina. I think we're going to see those players really come together and put up some good defensive numbers and a good defensive season, much like Denver has the last 2 years under Evero. So I'm really happy with this. This is almost like the, you know, if you're looking at the Carolina front office and ownership right now, hats off to you, because you've had a quarterback problem. You go get a quarterback's coach, a head coach, and, you know, fans have been wanting a really high level DC there. And I know we like Steve Wilks, but we wanted someone in this D'Amico Ryan's vein, get somebody young and exciting in to coach this defense. And they did that as well. So I'm really excited. Looking forward to Carolina's coaching staff for next year.
Ronan, feelings on the Evero hiring?
I really, really like it, Ben. You know, it's made me come around a lot on the Frank Reich hire. Just the addition of Evero, it's exactly like Simon was saying. We were all kind of hoping for a D'Amico Ryans type of hire. But this is kind of like the next best thing. And whenever you look at what Matt Eberflus, who was the defensive coordinator in Indianapolis, he was able to go on and get a head coaching job in Chicago. So, you know, it's not like Frank Reich's tree is, you know, that shady, I guess, if you want to call it. So I like it, and that Carolina defense has some talent. So I'm excited to see what they're able to do on the field.
I'm gonna tell you that I love it too, and then I'm gonna muddy up the waters real quick and get y'all's opinion on it, okay? Because it's just what I do, right? I love it, okay? I think it's the right thing. I think he's young. I think he's creative. I don't think he'll be all stodgy, right? Which I think the Panthers need. Even though I like the Panthers organization, they have over the years had a tendency to be a little stodgy. Maybe not quite as creative as some other franchises. So I love bringing him in from Denver. I love what I saw out of that Denver defense. Now let me muddy up the waters, okay? Does it concern either of y'all that he's only been DC in Denver for 1 year? Before that, he was more of an assistant kind of a coach, a position kind of a coach, and also that he had so much talent to work with on that Denver defense. As good as it looked, and it did, and I'm excited about it. But we've seen coordinators before, last year even, I won't name names, but they were hot, 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 hot names. And now this year they're getting fired. So it happens. It happens every offseason. Any concerns at all about that here? And if so, why? Ronan, I'll start with you.
I don't think the concern should be huge. Just because, yes, that Denver Broncos defense was talented, but they also had a lot of money on injured reserve. And they were also coming off of the year trading away Von Miller. And then this year they traded away Bradley Chubb, and they were still able to produce. Now, they don't have necessarily the high end players. I think Pat Surtain, Simmons, that's really all I could think of in terms of high tier talent, Randy Gregory. But I think Evero's going to have a field day. I think this Carolina defense has all the chance to be even better than what Denver was this year.
Simon.
Yeah, I'm not too concerned because he has been a part of some really good defensive staffs in the past. He was with the 49ers for 2 years a while back in the mid-2010s there, and then with the Rams before he was with the Broncos, coaching up that secondary that has gone on to produce some really good players and has made the most out of some, you know, not as talented players on their roster. So I like his body of work that he's had since then. And he still has good talent, right? We're not asking him to go from producing with an abundance of talent to now, hey, now I need you to overachieve with less. He has good defensive pieces. So I think he's going to be able to put it all together with those guys. It is a valid point though, right? 1 year of DC work, but again, it's not like he has now gotten the head coaching job, right? And we're making this big leap. We're asking him to do the same thing with still very talented players and in an NFC South that isn't the most high-powered of offenses. So you've got six games built in where you're facing, I mean, we'll figure it out this offseason maybe, but we have no idea who the quarterbacks in that division are going to be right now. So I understand a few trepidations, but I think for the most part we can feel pretty good about this.
And I'm going to stick a plug in here for those of you who are wondering who might be the quarterbacks in that division this upcoming season. Ronan and Simon both put together a very large and significantly laid out podcast a couple of weeks ago over on the Simon Short podcast, so by all means go check that out. for all of that. All right, fair enough. So we don't have too much concerns on Evero. I don't really either, but it is worth mentioning that it does happen. Sometimes guys aren't as good as we all thought. Simon?
I just want to throw out one more concern. On the Denver side, Sean Payton was touting this big game about the staff he was going to put together, or at least, you know, maybe we all just blew that out of proportion. Who really knows? But I want to say it for fun. While I don't think we necessarily thought 100% everyone was going to stay there, what do we think is going to happen now? I think Brian Flores has been interviewing for this position, currently with the Steelers, but any concerns about, and you know, the Big Fangio is the other guy that we were wondering about, but he's in Miami. Any concerns about the staff that Peyton is putting together? Does it feel like it's getting kind of thrown together, or do we see the vision for what Sean Payton's putting together, Ronan?
I think there are definitely concerns, just because everybody thought, all right, Fangio. And if it wasn't Fangio, then all right, well, then they're just going to keep Evero. And then they didn't keep Evero. So now it's kind of between Brian Flores and I think Wilkes, Steve Wilkes has been in the mix for defensive coordinator positions. But I mean, aside from those two, I off the top of my head, I don't know if I can name a hot name for a defensive coordinator position.
Ben, any thoughts?
For my part, no concerns if they can get Flores or Wilkes. Both of those guys will step in. I haven't checked out the Broncos defensive free agents, but as far as the coaching goes, if they can get one of those two guys, no real concerns. I think they'll be fine.
All right.
We have a Super Bowl to get to.
Do it.
And our two guys are ready to talk about it. So we'll go back and forth. We won't try to throw out everything all at once, but we're going to go back and forth. Simon has the Chiefs. Ronan has the Eagles side of it. We'll kind of throw it back and forth, and then we'll come out with some predictions before we start our awards. All right. So, Simon, you've got the Chiefs here. Start us off here with our Super Bowl preview.
All right. Here we go. Kansas City Chiefs. I want to start off with the injuries before I break down kind of my key points of the game that I'm looking at. But we obviously saw in that Bengals game, four key players for the Chiefs all go down. Three being wide receivers. So this is going to be really interesting going against that Eagles defense. Mecole Hardman went down with a pelvis injury, kind of re-aggravated an old injury from this season. He's the one that I think is most questionable to play, but again, it's very early. It's Sunday, a week out from the Super Bowl as we record this, so we'll see. But he's the one that even Andy Reid in an interview, it's even kind of hinted at being the most questionable. Juju Smith-Schuster with a knee injury. He should be able to play. Things are trending in the right direction. Like, the swelling has been going down. The pain has been manageable. So he should be okay. Kadarius Toney went out with an ankle injury. It seemed like it was a mild sprain. So I think that one's a little more 50-50, somewhere in between Juju and Mecole Hardman. But we also know what injuries with Kadarius Toney are like. So who knows? We could be thinking he's going to play all the way up until Sunday, and then he's inactive. We have no idea. I wouldn't bank on anything, to be completely honest. And then defensive back with Jarius Sneed went out with a concussion. We know what the concussion protocol calls for. We'll just have to wait and see what the doctors say. So we are waiting on those four guys. But in Sneed's case, at least those young defensive backs kind of had a good game against the Bengals and have gotten a lot of experience this year with some other injuries. So they should be well equipped. But Sneed is a very, very important part of that defense for what they do from a pass coverage standpoint, moving him around in the nickel on the outside, playing deep safety. He allows them to do a lot of things and get creative. So while I think they can manage just from a personnel standpoint without Sneed, he unlocks a lot of that defense. But the first thing about the Kansas City defense that I want to focus on tonight is, can they get pressure on and or sack Jalen Hurts? Now, without looking into the numbers, your first thought would be, you know, who's sacking Jalen Hurts, right? Who's getting after that quarterback? It's the best offensive line in the league. Jalen Hurts is an incredible runner. It should be really hard to do that, right? Well, digging into the numbers a little bit, I took the 27 quarterbacks that have played at least 12 games this season. This was back in the regular season, of course. Hurts was seventh in sack percentage at over 7%. So over 7% of the time Jalen Hurts is dropping back, he's getting sacked. And again, that's seventh in the league. He's eighth in sacks total taken among those 27 quarterbacks with 38. So you can get after him a little bit. And it's because they like to take those big plays down the field, right? That requires you to hold the ball a little bit more. And we saw this with Joe Burrow at certain points early this season. When you have a good offensive line, you feel pretty confident, right? You sit back there and you're like, hey, I might take a hit, but I also am probably going to wind up with time, the time that I need to take a big shot more often than not. So I'm going to hold on to this ball maybe a little longer than the average quarterback, and that can result in sacks. So he's a top 10 sack quarterback in the NFL, right? So there's a chink in the armor a little bit. You can get after Jalen Hurts. Here's Kansas City stats from this season. On the season, in the regular season, so we're not even just talking about January Steve Spagnuolo defense, right, which is the big thing. Kansas City was 11th in the NFL in blitzes, first in quarterback pressures, third in quarterback hurries, seventh in quarterback knockdowns, and second in sacks. This team gets after the quarterback, right, for what they lack in, you know, traditional pass coverage, just traditional, like, keeping yards and points down. This team gets after the quarterback if they're going to do anything. And you know this gets ramped up in the postseason with Steve Spagnuolo. He's going to send stuff at Hurts, send stuff at the Eagles all the time, and it's not going to slow down. On the other hand, you know, so how that affects, you know, the Eagles offense is what I'm looking for. So are they going to run it more? Are they going to take less deep shots? Is Hurts going to look to run the ball more? Whatever that ends up affecting is going to change an aspect of this game at some point, I think, because I think the Chiefs are going to be able to get after the quarterback one way or another. On the flip side of that same question, right, you say, okay, sure, the Chiefs can get after Jalen Hurts, but what about Patrick Mahomes? The Chiefs offensive line isn't as good, and this Eagles pass rush was first in the league in sacks with 70. Well, Mahomes was only 21st in sacks taken with 26. And before last week's game against the Bengals, he hadn't taken more than two sacks in a game since week 9 against the Tennessee Titans in that primetime Sunday or Monday night game that, you know, was really great. And the Titans were, you know, just pulling out all the stops to try and stay close in. So while that, I think the Chiefs will be able to neutralize that pass rush a little bit from the Eagles, not to a great extent. I think their tackles are at a severe disadvantage against the Eagles pass rushers. But Patrick Mahomes knows how to not take sacks, and that's the main thing. He knows how to diagnose quickly. He's been doing a great job of that this year. He knows when to get rid of the ball, when to escape. And I'm not too worried about that ankle. Still a week from now, and it looked pretty good for the most part against the Bengals. So I think the pass rush getting after the quarterback is going to be a huge, you know, a huge flip of the coin for this team and for this game. You know, the Eagles have consistently won in this pass rush sense, both from them getting after the quarterback and, you know, okay, can we do that enough to negate what Hurts is going up against? I don't know if that's going to be the case in this one. I don't think the Chiefs are going to completely outwin this, right? I don't think they're going to get five sacks and give up none, but I think that they could get an advantage in this aspect is what I'm looking at. And offensively for Kansas City, what I want to know is, can they run on the Eagles defense? The Eagles were 8th in the NFL in rushing yards allowed per game at 107.2. Kansas City, by the advanced stats, top 10 rushing offense. They're 9th in offensive rushing DVOA. And Philly was 21st in run defense DVOA. So from the advanced metrics in terms of success rates and, you know, what you need on a down-to-down basis, Chiefs are very good. And the Eagles lose a lot of those battles. Going through the numbers on a season long for every team, about 120 rushing yards is about the average per team. The Eagles have given up more than that in 10 out of 19 games so far in this season. So it's not a lot, but it is over half. This is really their only weak point on defense. Meanwhile, the Chiefs have ran for over 120 yards 8 times. 6 of those 8 have been in the second half of the season. So their run game has clearly gotten to a much better point than it has been in the last few years here in the later part of the season. And so I'll just be curious if they want to utilize that. They didn't do it a lot against the Bengals. It was a close game. I want to see if the Chiefs can get out to an early lead, or maybe even they do this from the beginning. Can they try to run this ball on the Chiefs defense that has great corners and, like I said, that great pass rush? Maybe they try to negate that a little bit with the run game. So those are really the two things that I'm looking for. At the end of the day, this team has Patrick Mahomes, and that's why I'm going to end up picking them when we get to that portion. Ronan is going to throw out a lot of great analysis and stuff, and I've seen a lot of great stats, and I know what this Eagles team is about, and I've been behind them all season long. They've been my Super Bowl pick, I think, since we did our midseason projections. But this Chiefs team, man, they've shown me everything I've needed to see in terms of what I was looking for from, okay, what do they do without Tyreek Hill? Okay, what do they do without, you know, Tyrann Mathieu going into the season at the beginning with the young defensive backs? Okay, move Chris Jones back to D tackle instead of defensive end, yada, 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 all this stuff. At the end of the day, Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback and maybe the best player in the NFL right now. And I'm going to go with that guy. And just looking at these other two things, pass rush for Kansas City, the sack rate of Jalen Hurts, the run game of Kansas City, the run defense for the Eagles, gives me a little bit more confidence that I can kind of just blindly put my faith in Patrick Mahomes at the end of the day. But that's everything I have on the Chiefs. Ronan, what do you have on the other side of the ball here for the Eagles?
All righty. All fantastic points, but I'm about to tell you why you're wrong, of course, as you're about to do a spit take. but let's go ahead and start with the MVP candidate quarterback, Jalen Hurts, right? Going into the season, Hurts had a good season last year, right? He showed signs that, okay, maybe there's something there. But I don't think anyone expected what Hurts has done this season. Hurts has become a much more accurate quarterback this year, and that's led to less turnovers, which is obviously great whenever you're a running team. If you can run the ball great and not turn the ball over, you're going to win football games. Jalen Hurts has passed for 22 touchdowns this year and also ran for 13. And he's only turned the ball over six times. And I believe all six of those are interceptions. He didn't lose a single fumble this season. I believe he fumbled five times, but he didn't lose a fumble. His ability to get out of the pocket, I mean, we all know he's a dual threat, right? And his ability to extend plays is going to force Kansas City to make a decision. Do you want to try to rush him but while he's behind the phenomenal offensive line, you know, the Steve Spagnuolo aggressive defense? Or do you drop seven in hopes that they don't run the ball, right? Because start sitting back. That's whenever they start catching you on your heels and they're off to the races. This Eagles team is a rushing machine. They ran the ball the third most amount of times this season, during the regular season at least, 544 times. Ball control, I believe, in this game is going to be crucial. It's Patrick Mahomes. You want to keep that ball out of his hand for as long as possible. So those drives, if things go the Eagles' way, those drives are going to be taking as long as possible. Just to kind of note on this Eagles' rushing offense, Miles Sanders has ran for 4.9 yards per carry this season, 11 touchdowns. Hurts ran for 760 yards during the regular season, like I said, those 13 touchdowns. And Kenneth Gainwell has had himself a really good postseason, averaging 6.2 yards per carry. Now, while talking about this Eagles rush offense, they also have weapons out the wazoo. They have A.J. Brown, who was traded to Philly this year, and he has showed out. I don't know if there were questions about his ability to become a number one receiver. I think everybody viewed him as, at the very least, like a Mike Williams, like 1.5 type of deal. But man, has he just exceeded those expectations. And along with Devontae Smith, everybody, you know, as he was getting drafted, everybody thought he was going to be too small. And here he is making big play after big play. And then Dallas Goedert as well. He has been a very consistent target for this Eagles offense. And aside from those three and maybe Quez Watkins, it's all rushing, which is kind of insane if you think about it, because I believe those three are the only three on the team to have 50 or more receptions, which, you know, I don't know the history and how or how many players per team get 50 or more receptions, but three, I don't know. That just stood out to me, the fact that their playmakers aren't getting a ton of targets and receptions. But just to continue, this Eagles offensive line, as I've been saying, this rush offense has been great, and that's in large part of this offensive line. And I think this is where the game comes down to. I'm in agreement with you, Simon. I think it's going to come down to whether Jason Kelce can shut down Jones and whether Frank Clark can be held silent. Because if those two can be held to, you know, two sacks combined, I think Kansas City might be in a little bit of trouble. Because on the flip side of things, this Philadelphia defense is brutal. You mentioned it, Simon. Four players Actually, I don't know. They had 70 sacks this season, I believe is what you mentioned. But four players on this Eagles defense had 10 or more sacks this season, the first time in NFL history. And whenever your quarterback, Kansas City, has a bum ankle behind a kind of suspect offensive line, they're good in some areas, not the best in others. It's going to be a battle in the trenches during the Super Bowl. And I, for one, am all for it. Just to round off my last point, this Eagles defense, they allowed the least yards per attempt this year, 5.4 an attempt, which means this Chiefs offense is going to have to get the ball out quick. And I don't necessarily know if these Chiefs wide receivers are going to be able to gain separation on guys like Bradberry and Darius Slay and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. So I know my monologue wasn't as long. Hopefully I still made good points and I'm able to convince you and the audience. Ben, what are your thoughts? Who do you think's going to win? Why am I right? Let me hear it.
Okay, hang on. If we're getting aggressive out here, I need a rebuttal. See, Roman was sneaky. I mentioned in the Slack, I was like, hey, let's try to make this a like debate or like Ben's a judge and we have to try to win the case. Ronan didn't respond to it. So I was like, okay, we're not going to do that. That was silly. Ronan, meanwhile, just like threw the bag out here. So let me just say a couple things. To the wide receiver separation point, good. It's a great point. The corners are great. The defensive backs are great. I would just argue that they also got zero separation in the Bengals game, and it didn't matter because Patrick Mahomes can hit any target and throw any receiver open. So I'm just gonna leave that there. And I don't think I said this very well when I was going through my stuff, but you mentioned the running game, so I need to bring it back up. We don't think of the Chiefs as a great defense. We especially don't think of them as a great rush defense. But they are the team that is eighth in the NFL in rushing yards allowed per game at 107.2. So they are allowing the eighth fewest rushing yards per game at 13 yards below the average, whereas the Eagles are on the other side of the average, what they're allowing. So it'll be interesting, right? You know, this strength on a strength that we didn't know existed. But the Chiefs run defense, I think, is going to be able to hold up a little bit better than we expect. Whereas that Eagles run defense, I'm a little more worried about. But okay, now that I've said my piece, go ahead, Ben. What do you got?
I think it's going to be a very close game. I'll save my prediction until the very end when we're all handing out final scores. We'll continue to go back and forth here for a minute until we run out of things to talk about. So let me get this from you because we haven't talked about it yet. I don't think it's at the foremost of anybody's concern now. But when we last saw Patrick Mahomes, he wasn't 100%. Simon, you did touch on it. He was somewhere around 80, 85%. He's nowhere near 100. 2 weeks later, though, I want to know from you in a second how close to 100% you think he is. Is it 92? Is it all the way up to 100, what you feel like? And Ronan, on your end with Jalen Hurts, it was really hard to pick up. I don't think anybody else is talking about it. I might have been the only one talking about it, so maybe it's a mirage. But I felt like Hurts was around 85 to 90% too, and they just shielded it so well because for three of the halves of the last four halves, they didn't need him to step up at a high level really. So, but anyway, where do y'all think your two quarterbacks will be at percentage-wise? Simon, you first.
For Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, I'm not too worried about the ankle right now or going into the game. We saw him in that Bengals game really only have one or two times on a couple of throws that he seemed to really have an issue with it. And I think by the time game time comes around, he's going to be fine. Now, what I will be concerned about is, like Roman said, if the Eagles are getting after him and somebody happens to land on that ankle at some point, it's going to be a bigger issue than, say, it would if it was 100% healthy of an ankle. But I think just on its own, in a vacuum, going into the game, ankle is something I'm not concerned about for Patrick Mahomes. Ronan, what do you have on Jalen Hurts and his overall health?
You know, I don't think it's anything to be legitimately, I guess, concerned about. It's something to watch. But similarly to, you know, how you view Mahomes' injury, you know, if it's landed on or if he lands on it, you know, obviously that's something that could be you know, worth monitoring moving forward. But, you know, going into the week, as of right now, I don't view it as much of a concern.
And I'm going to come thundering in here with my opinion. I haven't tossed it out much. I'm concerned for both quarterbacks. I think at some point in this game, Hurts is going to have to throw the ball deep. The way it plays out, Hurts is going to have to throw the football deep. And I'm not totally sure that he's able to do it with the accuracy he was earlier in the season. So for me, that's a concern. For Mahomes, he is playing the best defensive line he's played all year. At some point, they're going to break through on him, not once or twice, but multiple times. He is going to get hit, and he is going to have to run around. So I think he can do it. I think both guys will be functional. I don't think it'll be a huge deal. But I am concerned for both guys, to be quite honest. And I'll throw that. I'll leave it out there at that. Let's get some Super Bowl picks now. Simon, I'll let you give your actual score first, and then Ronan, and then I'll throw mine in.
All right. So I've been calling it to be the Chiefs all season long. I'm not going to waver off of that now. At the end of the day, I just believe in Patrick Mahomes too much. I'm going to go with a slightly high. I wish I had looked at like past Super Bowl scores, but I'm going to go a little high here. I'm going to go 31-27 Kansas City. I think it's going to be a shootout, but I think there's going to be enough key defensive stops at the right places. 31-27 Chiefs is my final prediction.
I like it. I like it. I was thinking about going something similar, but I don't know if it will be as high scoring of a game as you may think. I'm going to go the Eagles 24, Chiefs 17. Ooh. I think relatively, you know, not necessarily low scoring game, but you know, not both teams hitting the 20s.
All right. I've got the Chiefs winning. I think it's going to be a weird flow game. I don't think this is going to be a smooth flowing game. I think the way these two teams play, it's going to produce some weird stuff. I've got the Chiefs winning 30-27, 30-28, something like that.
You got to pick one.
30-28. Right. For me, all the analytics suggest an Eagles win. I can't find a single analytic that I look at that suggests a Chiefs victory. To me, it's all skewed the Eagles' way. But I think the Chiefs have the two major categories, and that is the coaching and the quarterback. And because of that, I'm going to come up with the Chiefs victory here. It's just hard for me to pick against Mahomes, a healthy Mahomes with a reasonably healthy offensive line. It's hard for me to pick against them, so I'm not going to. I'm out there with the Chiefs here. I think it's a close, tight game, but give me the Chiefs, 30-28. Anybody else see anything else on the Super Bowl here?
That's it, man. It's crazy to feel this way a week out, but I think we're just itching and ready to go at this point.
All right. Well, Simon, segue us into our awards thing, man.
Fantastic. Thank you all so much for listening. We are now going to seamlessly, at the drop of a hat, go forward into the past for your 2022 NFL Phantom Football Podcast Award Show. Thank you all so much. Enjoy.
If you're in the mood for more content from Phantom Sports Industries, join me, Brandon Tim, at the Phantom Fantasy Football Podcast. Together, we can analyze and discuss the favorite hobby of millions of football fans in new and insightful ways by crunching the data and reviewing past performances that will ultimately help us become champions in our respective leagues. Listen anytime, and new episodes drop on Wednesdays wherever podcasts are found. Once again, this is the Phantom Fantasy Football Podcast from Phantom Sports Industries. This is Brandon Tim signing out from the Phantom Fantasy Football Podcast. We'll see you there.
All right, everybody. We are now going to do our 2022 Phantom Football Podcast NFL Award Show. With the Super Bowl now being 2 weeks away, no games next week, only the two games we had to talk about at the top, we thought this would be a great time to present our awards, and the NFL just announced their finalists for all of these awards last week. So we are ready. I believe we have counted all the votes, tallied all the ballots. We have crunched the numbers of the very sophisticated and very in-depth voting process we have here. Among the three of us, we probably won't yell at each other, but, you know, we'll see what happens the next Phil Young. Ben, Ronan, are you guys ready for our first annual Phantom Football Podcast NFL Awards?
Absolutely.
Oh, look at that. The unison.
Right there. We're just, the chemistry is just flawless right now. Mortal Kombat finishing move style. So let's start off with our 2022 most valuable player. There's going to be a little surprise here at the end as well. But this player led the league in passing yards and touchdowns. He had just the eighth season in the NFL, in NFL history, of 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns. He led his team to the number one seed in the AFC and tied for the best record in the NFL. Your 2022 Phantom Football Podcast MVP and Offensive Player of the Year is Patrick Mahomes, quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. So to kick us off, let's start with the MVP portion of the conversation. Ronan, I want to kick it to you. You and I voted for Patrick Mahomes for this award. Why is Patrick Mahomes our MVP this year?
Well, Simon, it's pretty clear cut, and all season long I've been advocating for Jalen Hurts. But in a year where quarterback play has been so down, Patrick Mahomes has stayed consistent. He's been Patrick Mahomes. He put up I believe he's the only 5,000-yard passer this year, and 40 touchdowns. It's hard to dispute that any season. And whenever no one else is putting up 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns, it's pretty easy to point the finger at Patty and say, all right, you win it.
500 more yards than the second best guy in Justin Herbert, and 6 more touchdowns than the second best guy in Joe Burrow. That's basically like almost like he played 3 more games than anybody else at the level that he's playing. So pretty incredible stuff, I think. Ben, you were the one voter against Mr. Patrick Mahomes. And whatever you think at home, that means for what Ben voted for, you are wrong. It's not Jalen Hurts. It's not Joe Burrow. It's not Josh Allen. It's not Brock Purdy. Ben, give us who you voted for here for MVP and explain yourself.
Yeah, I voted for Justin Jefferson, wide receiver for the Vikings. And listen, let me start with Mahomes. There's no argument against Mahomes winning the award. There just isn't one. Mahomes deserves it 100%. Phenomenal year in every way. We've seen him do it before. Even last year wasn't his greatest year. But almost every year now, you can just talk about him in terms of MVP, and he's worthy of all of that. I mean, he should have all these awards. I think for me, if I'm going to vote for somebody else, it's Justin Jefferson. His ability to do with what he did with the Vikings. You look at that Vikings team and you wonder, with that point differential, I think it ended up being negative on the year or barely over the plus, and yet their record was so good. And you're like, well, what's kicking in there? And what I kept coming back to was Justin Jefferson. No, he's bailing them out. It was never more obvious than in the Buffalo Bills game. But a lot of these games, it was the Jefferson plays. It was Kirk Cousins throwing the ball to Justin Jefferson, and that made a huge difference in that record. Bad defense, one of the worst defenses in football all year. Good offense, but it all fueled through Justin Jefferson. He made the huge difference there. And another thing that's kicking in for me, too, is I don't like awards in which we say anybody can win and the only one position can win. Quarterbacks have won this award, I think, 14 out of the last 15 years. And even you go back through the 80s and the 90s, it's really just been a few running backs mixed in. It's always been – so, you know, let's just call it a quarterback award. Let's make awards for every position and end it at that. Let's not pretend like this award can be won by anybody because it really can't be. So, but Justin Jefferson had a massive influence, and I know – people can say, well, Mahomes had the same influence on the Chiefs. And he did. He absolutely did. But it's unusual. We're starting to see more influence now by wide receivers, the way the game is today, that they do have an ability to change the game, not quite to the extent the quarterback does, but they do have that ability. So that's where I'm at on this. I voted for Justin Jefferson, but Mahomes is every bit deserving of this.
Ronan, would you like the first crack at rebutting Ben's heresy of voting against the NFL prodigal son, Patrick Mahomes, / voting for a wide receiver for MVP? Come on, Ben. It's a quarterback award. Like you said, what are you doing here? Ronan, what do you got for Ben?
You know, it is a quarterback award, and I do see where you're coming from. But, you know, just taking the words most valuable player, right, and applying that to the team, and you take Justin Jefferson out of that offense and plug him in with the run-of-the-mill wide receiver, right, I still think that team has success. Now, it, probably not to the extent that they had this season, but I still think they have success. Now, you take out Patrick Mahomes and you insert a run-of-the-mill quarterback with those weapons around. Like, let's say, we won't even go there, but just a run-of-the-mill quarterback. I don't think that that team even wins the AFC West, to be honest with you. Just taking the words most valuable player, for me, unfortunately, it's always going to be a quarterback just because that's what the most valuable position is. But I completely see where you're coming from, and I'm not too far off from where you're coming from, because I put Justin Jefferson as my offensive player of the year. Now, Simon, I won't lie to you. As much as Ben putting Justin Jefferson at MVP startled me, you putting Patrick Mahomes at MVP and Offensive Player of the Year, to where it's completely overthrown our ballots and now he's won both awards, that's almost startled me just as much, or if not more, than Justin Jefferson getting an MVP vote.
Listen, like Patrick Mahomes owning the NFL, I own the Fan Football Podcast. I don't want to tell you, I have all the power. Here's the thing. And I'm going to do a Ben here, and I'm going to make two arguments simultaneously. Number one, I'm agreeing with Ronan in that the quarterback is inherently just the most valuable position you can have. And it would take something astronomical to knock that off. If Derrick Henry in 2020, with over 2,000 yards rushing and 17 touchdowns, can't win MVP, Justin Jefferson can't, because when I went to look at Offensive Player of the Year, I actually just wrote down Justin Jefferson. And the way I did it, I have my little notes app open and I write down a bunch of names and I just bold one, and that's my winner. And that way I can talk about the other guys. And I had Justin Jefferson bolded at first. And then I looked into the numbers and it's almost as much, and I love Justin Jefferson and he's coming out on top in many of these for me, but it's almost hard to argue he was even the most valuable wide receiver, let alone best offensive player, let alone most valuable player in the NFL. Because, you know, compare him to Tyreek Hill, played the same amount of games. Tyreek Hill actually left a lot of games throughout the season. Justin Jefferson had 1,809 yards. Tyreek Hill had 1,710. Jefferson had 184 catches. Tyreek Hill had 119. Jefferson with 8 touchdowns, Hill for 7. And Hill did that with Jalen Waddle across from him, significantly better than where Adam Thielen is right now across from Jefferson. So Jefferson is the focal point of that offense, the focal point of making it go. And by DVOA, they were still in the bottom third of the league. And his numbers aren't all that much better than Tyreek Hill. You look around at some of the other skill guys in the league. You can talk about A.J. Brown, who had almost 1,500 yards. He had 11 touchdowns, so he outpaced both Jefferson and Hill. But he only had 88 catches himself. Devontae Smith across from him, Dallas Goedert at tight end, and then the running game that Philly has. Austin Eckler led the league in total touchdowns, right? So that's a big deal. But that offense was also really bad. And his running numbers, I believe he had, I'm trying to find him here, 915 yards on the ground. So you can't really justify that, I don't think, for offensive player of the year, especially because you look at another running back in the AFC West, and Josh Jacobs, who led the league in rushing yards, had 1,653, and he had 12 touchdowns. That's pretty good. Why can't you make an argument for him? So when I was looking at this, I always want to give a receiver, tight end, or running back, by tight end, I mean Travis Kelce, offensive player of the year, because, yeah, that is created, like Ben is saying, for, okay, MVP is going to have to be a quarterback award. What else do these other guys have a chance for? And that's offensive player of the year. But there wasn't enough of a differentiator between these guys at their own positions. It was Eckler and Jacobs are a toss-up for me. Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, A.J. Brown are a toss-up for me. I wanted to work in a Travis Kelce kind of thing, but his raw stats just aren't there for the award. Unfortunately, the counting stats are really important to this. And then you look at the quarterbacks. Like I said, Patrick Mahomes, 500 more yards, 6 more touchdowns than the second-place guy in each of those categories. And not only statistically, but just completely changing the Kansas City offense. They trade away Tyreek Hill, and they have a more efficient and better offense. They're first in DVOA, they're first in offensive DVOA, first in passing offense DVOA. This is the best offense in the NFL, and they're doing something completely different than they've done the previous 5 years. What was the one flaw with Patrick Mahomes last year in the playoffs? He couldn't nickel and didn't dime his way down the field against, you know, this Bengals drop eight defense. Well, he did that all year this year. He spread the ball around. He went underneath. And then he faced this Bengals defense who was rushing him. And I know playoffs aren't a factor in these awards, but just an example of what he is still capable of doing. Even on a bad ankle, he has the talent to, you know, evade all these pressures and take all these blitzes and still make plays to guys like Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Sky Moore. Patrick Mahomes is the only offensive player this season who put up both the astronomical raw stats you need for an end-of-season award, but also separated himself from his peers enough to warrant getting this award over anybody else at their position. The only other guy close enough for me in terms of differentiating himself, as I said, was Kelsey, but his raw stats just weren't there. But, I mean, Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, A.J. Brown, I think all have equal shots at this award. Austin Eckler and Josh Jacobs, I think, have equal shots or at least equal opportunity for this award. Patrick Mahomes is the only guy that really stood head and shoulders above everybody he was competing with. So that's where I was at in terms of giving him both awards. Ben.
Yeah, and I actually didn't mind Mahomes getting both awards. I know Roland was tongue-in-cheek on that, but I didn't mind that because he had that kind of a year. But I'll say this. The argument has always been, and I'm going to pull my old man card here, for 20 years now, the argument has always been, well, quarterback is the most valuable position, therefore that should win the award. Well, if that's the case, let's make that the official definition and just make it a quarterback-only award. Let's just go ahead and let everybody know that. But even aside that, I do think the Vikings this year, without Justin Jefferson, you plug in another receiver, say, you know, average replacement receiver, I think they're under 500. I think the statistics indicate that. Again, the defense was one of the worst in football. And if you take away Justin Jefferson, if you take him out, I think they are under 500. Now, same argument with Mahomes. If you take him out, the Chiefs are probably under 500 too. Matter of fact, I feel certain they are. So it's an escalator there. But I'll say this, Justin Jefferson should have, I think you have an argument for Jefferson this year, but Aaron Donald a year ago for the Rams, there's no question he was the most valuable player on that team. They don't even make the playoffs if Aaron Donald isn't playing for that defense. They just don't. That's just a fact. So I think he was the biggest factor. I thought he should have been MVP last year, quite honestly. But the way it's built, we just automatically assume quarterback is most valuable, but in some years he's not. And so this is me fighting against the system. It's a useless fight. It's worthless, but it's one I did anyway.
Anybody have any more thoughts on Offensive Player of the Year or MVP? Ronan, did you want to talk about Jefferson a little bit more as your Offensive Player of the Year? Ben voted for Patrick Mahomes as Offensive Player of the Year along with me. Ronan, any more thoughts on Justin Jefferson? I know you talked about him during the MVP portion.
Yeah, you know, I just kind of dissed him a little bit after saying that the Vikings would be okay without him. But yeah, he's my offensive player there. He, by at least in my opinion, he had a little bit of the more quote unquote by far better year. I think it's a little bit more. There's a little bit more separation between him and the rest of the skill position players that are eligible for the award this year. I feel like Jefferson's relatively a shoe-in for the award.
Fair enough. Let's see then. Ronan, I believe you are up to present our next award.
Yes, sir. So we're going to be talking about the Defensive Player of the Year, the Phantom Football Podcast, Defensive Player of the Year. He's one of the best defensive players over the past, well, since he's basically come into the league. He's led the league in sacks this year with 18.5, and he played for arguably the best defense in the NFL. His 19 tackles for loss and 2 forced fumbles were also second in the league. Your 2022 Phantom Football Podcast Defensive Player of the Year is Nick Bosa. I don't know if it's necessarily that much of a shocker. It seems like Nick Bosa is probably going to be the defensive player of the year whenever it's all said and done. There are a couple other, you know, eligible players out there. Micah Parsons comes to mind. I know he's on a lot of people's ballots. Hassan Riddick had himself a really good season as well. You know, on my ballot, I don't know if he was on any of your guys's, but Roquan Smith had himself a really good season. Mm-hmm. Worth noting. So, Simon, you agreed with me. I voted for Nick Bosa. Simon did as well. Ben, you've voted for Micah Parsons. Now, he obviously had a great year. He's a phenomenal player. But he didn't necessarily have the stats that indicate a defensive player of the year, really. So what was your thought process on Micah Parsons being the DPOY?
Yeah, and I'll say again, for Bosa, Bosa might be the better all-around player now and moving forward for the next 5 years. I mean, Bosa deserves this award. No argument against him. But for me, when I looked at Micah Parsons and that Cowboys defense, if you take Parsons off of that Cowboys defense, it's not even a top 10 defense anymore. It's about a top 12, 15 kind of a defense. That secondary had some playmaking ability, but very inconsistent. The linebackers had a little bit of run-stopping ability, but nothing stand out there at the linebacker spot the way the 49ers have. They have some other guys who can get some pressure on the quarterback, but nothing like Micah Parsons generates. And if you want to know if an NFL team is serious about the problem they have at tackle versus an edge rusher, you look at when they move a tight end over there to block him. And NFL offenses were doing that all year to Micah Parsons. They were just taking a tight end and planting him over there. So basically you had a tackle and a tight end on Micah Parsons. And he's tying up two spots, and a lot of times he's still beating those two guys to get to the quarterback. And that created, you know, we talked about how good the Cowboys defense was all year. It was all because of Parsons. He created all of that, all the opportunities for all the other guys. And they had a couple of other guys who could get to the quarterback some, but it all came off of Parsons. So, again, Bosa deserves this, but my vote went to Parsons as I watched that kind of develop throughout the year.
I hear you. Absolutely. Now, Simon, you agreed with me, Nick Bosa, Defensive Player of the Year. What was your thought process on selecting him, and just overall thoughts on Nick Bosa?
Yeah, Nick Bosa is really just an incredible pass rusher, and you know, similarly to quarterback and MVP, Defensive Player of the Year has just become who's the best pass rusher, whether it's sacks or not. That's kind of the way it's going. So Aaron Donald, for example, just because he's not getting all the sacks coming from the interior, he's creating so much of that pressure in the pocket on passing downs that, you know, that's why he's won all the awards he had. For Nick, I think while maybe I wouldn't call him even the best defensive player on his own team, and I'll come back to that, I don't think this defense becomes what it is without him. I think that defensive line, for all the investments that they've made in it this year, hasn't been the line in totality that they had hoped. So him being healthy all year and being, you know, the obviously top sack leader in the NFL, I thought was a huge key to so much of what they did on the way to becoming the best defense in the league. The other guy that I had on my ballot, and really the only other guy, although Michael Parsons is fantastic, I just thought the year of going to edge rusher from off-ball linebacker kind of hurt him a little bit based on the numbers, but tape-wise and what he does, because they can still put him at off-ball linebacker in clutch situations, and they have, is incredible. But in terms of the production and the games this season, my other guy was Fred Warner that I was really interested in. He doesn't have the raw stats, unfortunately, and I don't know if he can do all the fun, cool stuff that he does in terms of pass coverage and zone defense, man defense, rundown defense. I don't know if he can be utilized and moved around the same way if the 49ers defensive coaching staff can't just say, all right, and Nick Bosa, you're going to line up here on the left side and you're going to get after the quarterback. And then Fred Warner's going to do cool stuff behind you. I think it's a very symbiotic relationship, but everything starts with the pass rush. So for me, everything that the 49ers do defensively, everything that Fred Warner does individually starts with the pass rush that the 49ers create. And that starts with Nick Bosa.
I love it. It definitely seems like this won't be the last time that Nick Bosa is in the Defensive Player of the Year mix. it'll be fun to watch how his career unfolds moving forward. Not for me personally as a Rams fan. I'll be dealing with that for the foreseeable future. But hey, you know, good for the Bosas, right? Ben, I believe that leads us to our next award, if you'd like to present.
All right, our next award is for Coach of the Year. This first-year head coach, not going to surprise anybody, took last year's 29th place team and turned them into the 10th place team who made the playoffs and won a playoff game by DVOA. This team went from dead last on offense to the 10th best team in the league in DVOA. Your Phantom Football Podcast Coach of the Year goes to Brian Daboll. Two of us voted for this guy. Somebody voted for somebody else. It wasn't me this time. I'm not the rebel. Somebody else was. But Brian Daboll just had an incredible year. There's no question about it. He's deserving. There were several deserving candidates, no doubt about it. Ronan, I'll let you kick this one off.
Yeah, Brian Daboll. I mean, what he did with the roster that he was given, you know, I think if the Giants had won a game over 500, right? I think that the New York media would have looked at this season as an ultimate win. So the fact that they ended up in the playoffs is just a testament to how well coached this team was. Now, obviously, the Giants had or have good pieces, right? They have Saquon. They have a solid offensive line structure. They have a good front seven. So there were pieces, but this was a if there's a will, there's a way type of year for the Giants. And how Brian Daboll is kind of reminds me almost of like Mike Vrabel-ish, which is probably isn't the best comparison because the Titans just missed the playoffs and are kind of under a whole rebuilding thing. But they just the way that he's able to will his team to victory, just very, very, very nice.
Simon, you had the dissenting opinion for us, so tell us who you got and what.
So my vote, and it changed right up until basically the last week of the regular season, my vote went to Kyle Shanahan of the San Francisco 49ers. And the reason being for that, when I got down to looking at my ballot and looking at the teams, here's what these two coaches did in the second half of the season. Brian Daboll and the New York Giants, after their bye week, went 3-5-1 in their last 9 games. Okay. Obviously an incredible hot start. That was a ton of fun. Obviously they got it back together, going 2-2 in their last 4 games, getting into the playoffs, clinched it by week 17. That is all great. But they went 3-5-1 in their last 9 games, all after the bye week. You don't like to get worse after your bye week. Meanwhile, the San Francisco 49ers, oh, you know, they just won their last 10 games of the season, went 9-0 after their bye week. And by the way, we're on their third string quarterback for the last 7 to 8 games of the regular season. Kyle Shanahan continues to prove to be very adaptable in his offense, which is very, very impressive. When you start the season thinking your team is going to be one thing with Trey Lance, and then you have to go back to an old thing in Jimmy Garoppolo, and then you add Christian McCaffrey and you want to add that element, and then you have to go to Brock Purdy and change that offense again, change your style, change your play calling, what you're going to do. And to win 10 games in a row and win your division when at week 7 we thought that division was sewn up, and just to really never give up and not have any excuses and put Mr. Irrelevant in position to win all those games, it was just so hard to overlook what Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers did. And that little bit, not a little bit, that slippage of the Giants and you know, their leader Daboll, obviously, who was fantastic. He's a second place guy easily. That was enough for me to give the edge to Shanahan.
Simon, you've got my heart here because you're fighting the system, because we all know these awards usually go to the coach who has the most surprising year, maybe not the best coach or the guy who did the best. Kyle Shanahan, to me, is the best coach around who hasn't won a Super Bowl. I mean, good gosh. This guy, I think, he's going to coach a long time. I think he's going to win a couple before he's done. Everything he touches is just so well executed. It's like he takes a Rubik's Cube. It's like he's running 3 different Rubik's Cubes at one time. I mean, it's phenomenal. So love what he's doing. he totally deserves this award. That Giants roster is just so ragged to me entering the season and had so many injuries. That's why I voted for Dable. But totally agree here on Shanahan as well. Ronan, anything else on the coaches?
No, sir. Both very well deserving, and there are a couple more. Another one that comes to mind is Doug Peterson, what he did in that quick turnaround in Jacksonville.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there were five or six guys who did a heck of a job this year. But I think we've got it narrowed down to the right couple of guys. Simon, bring out our next award for the program.
Our next award is the Assistant Coach of the Year, which, guys, to be honest, I did not know was a thing until we were prepping the doc for this last week. So very, very excited to talk about some assistant coaches here. Our winner here is another coach in his first year of this new role. This assistant is a first-time offensive coordinator in the NFL, and I believe in all of his coaching tenures, actually. This one made a similar offensive turnaround to Brian Daboll, our winner of Coach of the Year, taking a team from 29th in offensive DVOA, averaging just 19 points per game, to 5th in offensive DVOA with over 26 points per game. So adding a touchdown on average to this offense that was so terrible last year. Your 2022 Phantom Football Podcast Assistant Coach of the Year is Ben Johnson, offensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions. Ben Johnson took essentially the same roster that this team had, obviously a couple new wide receivers, but essentially the same roster. Jared Goff, those running backs, that offensive line that was so bad last year. Anthony Lynn was the offensive coordinator and lost play calling duties halfway through the year. Dan Campbell took him. Ben Johnson got promoted. Took essentially the same team, same offense, and made them a top five offense in the NFL. Really, really impressive stuff. Ronan, you and I were the voters of Ben Johnson. What did you like from the Detroit OC this season?
I mean, you said it yourself. He added a full touchdown to their DVOA, which is just absolute insanity, right? I mean, he made an offense that going into the season, nobody was excited about. I don't think anybody was thinking that this Lions offense was going to be top five in anything other than maybe turnovers. So going from that to, where we are now, completely well-deserving. I'm shocked that he's not a head coach already. It seems like he's coming back to Detroit at least for another year. So seeing where he goes in the future will be very interesting.
I'm glad he stayed. I think he's a little too green of a personality that I would hate for him to go somewhere and kind of get ruined by one of these bad teams. So we'll see what happens for Ben next. Our assistant coach of the year, Benjamin Parker. Tell us your thoughts on Ben Johnson, and then give us who you put on your who you voted for in this award.
Yeah, so Ben Johnson was right there with my second pick. Everything you guys just said about him is true. We thought that Lions offense might do something this year, but it was more like middle of the pack stuff is what my expectation was. Nothing like this. This was a top 10 offense for a large, large chunk of the season. Even when the defense was garbage, this offense was scoring a lot of points way back at the first month of the year and continued almost the whole way through, just a couple of blips, really. So hats off to Ben Johnson. I'll also give a shout out. I'm going to butcher the name. I apologize. I just don't say it enough. But the Broncos defensive coordinator, Ibarro. Yeah. So he gets a major shout out. But my guy is D'Amico Ryans. Basically, I've just flipped the thinking here. I know there's a lot of talent on that 49ers defense. There's no question about it. But that unit was so crisp. This was the best defense in football. And for almost the whole season, statistically, all the way across the board and in all kinds of different areas from start to finish, they had a couple of weeks that weren't great. That Chiefs week was not a great week for sure. But for the most part, this defense was so consistent, so efficient, so good at so many different things. I just really liked the work that D'Amico Ryans did. So that's who I voted for. Anybody else want to give a shout out to another assistant? Ronan? Anybody else? Simon?
I also had Lou Anarumo for the Bengals, Shane Steichen, the OC for the Eagles. You mentioned Ibarro. I think those are all great picks as well, but I definitely think think it comes down to one of these two.
I had Dan Quinn as the only other name that haven't mentioned on my ballot.
The Phantom Football Podcast is brought to you by Prediction Strike. Does the idea of the stock market interest you, but you aren't really sure what you're doing? Check out Prediction Strike. Prediction Strike is an app where you can invest in athletes like stocks. Buy and sell your stock in an athlete as their value rises and falls. Build your own portfolio of players and sell players before you think they're going to plummet. Download the app and use the code Phantom at sign up. That's F-A-N-T-O-M. Thank you for listening and enjoy the podcast. All right. And Ronan, take us on to our next award.
Yeah, so we're moving on to the Offensive Rookie of the Year. And this is a guy who led all rookies, both running backs and wide receivers, in touches. He also led all rookie running backs and receivers in yards from scrimmages. Oh, Jesus. Let me just restart from that.
Go ahead.
All right, so we're going to talk about the Offensive Player of the Year. This guy led all rookies in touches.
Hang on, wait, just since you already restarted, Offensive Rookie of the Year. You said player that time. Jesus,
of course I did.
Third time's the charm. You got it.
Hey, man. It's 11:30 on a Sunday night. A little rusty. All right. All right, so we're going to talk about the Offensive Rookie of the Year. This player led all rookie running backs and wide receivers. Holy crap. You guys just might just have to start hosting all these. Yeah, yeah.
Just skip it, man. Just
yeah.
Okay. Say it.
All right.
You could just say led all rookies.
Yeah, I'm just
And everybody should know we're excluding quarterbacks.
All righty, so we're going to talk about the Offensive Rookie of the Year. We're just going to go ahead and dive right into it. Kenneth Walker. He was an absolute animal all year long. All year long. Simon, give me your thoughts on Kenneth Walker.
Well, Ronan, you know, Kenneth Walker led all rookie running backs and wide receivers in touches, yards from scrimmage, and touchdowns. So he is the Phantom Football Podcast Offensive Rookie of the Year. Just so everyone knows why we're cracking up so much, Ronan couldn't say that intro like five times in a row. And so he just skipped it, and I just went ahead and read it for you. But yeah, that's basically what it is. It was kind of a down year in terms of the offensive rookies this year. Really, there's two contingents I think you can be in, maybe three if you want to get crazy. The other guy I had on my ballot was Chris Olave. If you look at the tape, I think he looked the best as a player, and he was my second place guy, but his overall stats just weren't high enough for a rookie of the year, I don't think. And then there's the Brock Purdy crowd, the people who want to give it to Brock for Mr. Irrelevant, the storybook of it, the Cinderella story of it, you know, started seven games as Mr. Irrelevant, won all of them, yada, yada. And that's all great and well and good. And, you know, I think there's a world where someone looks back in the history books in 10 years and says, Brock Purdy, Offensive Rookie of the Year, who's that? And then looks it up and it's like, wow, this guy, blah, blah, blah. But really, guys, the real answer, and we all said it, the rookie that had the biggest impact offensively for their team from week one through week 18 was Kenneth Walker. 9 touchdowns when no other rookie had more than 5, and led all rookies in those touches and yards from basically week 2 on, the starting running back for the Seahawks. Really impressive runner. I think he's going to be a very good rookie running back or running back on his rookie deal. We'll see about after that, you know, how running backs are. But I thought this was a very easy one with Ken Walker. Ben, any more thoughts?
I'll echo yours first, and that's Kenneth Walker was amazing. He not only – every time he touches the ball almost, he's going to get you positive yardage, so 3 to 5 yards. And then, oh, by the way, he can also break it for 60. He can get you both categories. And, oh, by the way, he can catch the football. So, I mean, in almost every way, he is a weapon. He is an asset. He gives them a distinct advantage, not just at the running back spot, but on offense. It was huge for them this year, for the Seahawks. Quick shout out to Jets running back Breece Hall. He might have won this award had he been able to stay healthy. He was off to a flaming, fiery, torchy start, but he did not stay healthy enough, so he's not going to get anybody's vote there. But Kenneth Walker, looks like he could be the staple of this offense for as long as he's on his rookie contract, at least.
Ronan, right. Any other thoughts here?
You know, I don't think I do. After butchering the intro a trillion different times, you know, I was all excited to talk about Kenneth Walker, and then I just wanted to move on from it. But I was very excited that this was the first pick or award that we all came to a consensus agreement on. We all agreed that Kenneth Walker deserved this award.
It can be done.
It can be. It can be. But it wasn't for our next award, Ben.
No, it wasn't. It was all your fault, unfortunately. But, hey, it's your turn to be the rebel, okay? Defensive Rookie of the Year. Sauce Gardner is our nomination as a podcast. He got two of our three votes. This guy led the league in passes defended and allowed just one touchdown pass all season. And he is our Phantom Football Podcast Defensive Rookie of the Year. Simon, I'll let you kick this one off.
I mean, from week one, Sauce Gardner looked like a ready-made NFL cornerback one, right? He was second cornerback drafted in the draft this year. We had high hopes and high expectations, especially after guys like Patrick Surtain and J.C. Horn last year had such good years. And it does, when we got to the end of the season here, it took me back to when we did our preseason cornerback rankings. We said we did defense and we said, who's most likely to get on this list for next year? And we all immediately said Patrick Surtain. And then we all kind of immediately regretted not putting him in our top five already. And now the rookie corners, man, they're might be flirting with the conversation with like rookie wide receivers where, you know, they can just walk in and be elite, which is crazy for the cornerback position. But Sauce, from day one, you just knew this is a guy that's going to be a top corner in the NFL for a really long time. Really great season from start to finish. And I, you know, made an all pro team already, Pro Bowl, all of that. So he was really terrific. But Ronan, go ahead and give us your dissenting pick here and make the case.
Yeah, I'm sorry for disagreeing with you guys here. And honestly, I did it a little bit just to be different because I knew you guys would go Sauce here. But I went with Tariq Woolen. He was tied for first in the league in interceptions with 6. He had 46 solo tackles, which as a rookie cornerback, that is impressive. He is 6'4", 210. So he's not some little body, you know, trying to square up. He's an able tackler. And he was also tied for fourth, I believe, in the league in pass deflections with 16. You can make the case that Sauce Gardner wasn't thrown to as much, which is true because he's more of the lockdown type of corner, opposed to Woolen, who quarterbacks were willing to test a little bit more often this season. But the numbers show for themselves, right? 6 interceptions, tied for fourth in pass deflections in the league. It was a very impressive rookie season, rookie campaign for Woolen, as it was for Sauce Gardner as well, though.
Yeah, and I listen, I'm going to spend a minute and just wax poetic on Ahmad Gardner. But before I do, love Tariq Woolen. This is buried treasure for the Seahawks. If they or anybody thought this guy could do what he did, they would have drafted him in the freaking first round. Nobody thought he could do this, okay? They might have said, hey, you know, we see a little something here. He still got drafted in, I think, the fifth round. So this is phenomenal. Love this guy for the next decade for the Seahawks. I mean, this guy's fantastic. But let me wax poetic here on Sauce Gardner. This guy takes the top receivers a lot of the time, not necessarily every week, but he gets a lot of the top assignments. Sauce Gardner does it a lot of times without safety help. He's left on an island. Sauce Gardner, it's amazing. It's astounding. Ronan, you touched on it. It's astounding that Gardner led the league in passes defended because a lot of teams were not willing to throw over his direction. A lot of weeks just quit. They're like, no, we'll throw somewhere else because we're not going to complete passes on him. And for him to step in and do that as a rookie, he's got the length, he's got the physicality, he can mirror, he can handle the double moves. I mean, you name it, all of it. There's nothing he can't do except get better. That's the only thing he needs to do is just continue to understand the offense and how offenses are going to attack him. That's it. Everything is there. He's got the hands. He's got the feet. I mean, it is all there for Sauce Gardner. He's not only he's one of the best players in the league, flat out, period. There's just no question about it. He transcends rookiedom here. He is just all the way up there at the top. Phenomenal. So I think this guy's an all-pro for years to come. Simon, anything else here on these two guys? All right. Let's move on then to a different award. Simon's going to hand it off to us.
All right. This is going to be a fun one, I think. We have the Comeback Player of the Year. An award that this year, I think, more than any, the understanding of what this award is for is called into question. So we'll sort that out here. But our Comeback Player of the Year has dealt with injuries for the last two seasons, played in just 15 games combined in 2020 and 2021. Last season, while playing in 13 games, he ran for less than 600 yards and just two touchdowns. Whereas this season, 2022, is part of the most surprising offenses in the league, was fourth in the NFL in rushing at over 1,300 yards and ninth in touchdowns with 10. The 2022 Phantom Football Podcast Comeback Player of the Year is Saquon Barkley, running back for the New York Giants. Really incredible turnaround, something we don't see from running backs. Normally when that big injury happens, that's kind of it. And, you know, we saw this with Todd Gurley recently, right? And sorry, Ronan. Where the great running back comes in and is immediately productive, immediately one of the best players in the NFL, Pro Bowls, all pros, lead the league in rushing, all of that. But then once that first big injury happens, and then we kind of see the year of the dip the year after that, we just have had too much history where it snowballs and it's done. Saquon, on the other hand, we saw that. We saw the injury year with two games in 2020. We saw the dip year in 2021. And we saw the big comeback here in 2022. He's going to get paid. He's going to have a second contract. How long and how productive he'll be after that, that's a different question and one we can't answer. But the fact that he literally turned his career around where it looked like there was a chance it was going to be done. He was going to be a vet minimum guy as a backup and hope to get a decent contract in the future to he's going to get a real payday now. I think makes him a clear comeback player of the year. Ben, you were the one that voted with me on this for Saquon. What do you have on the Giants running back?
Yeah, and I was perfectly willing to vote for Ronan's guy that he'll reveal here in just a minute. But to me, everything you just said about Saquon Barkley, plus the fact for me that as the year went on, he seemed to be just as good or better. It's not like he faded down the stretch. And, you know, that Giants team was – you know, injured to bits. They were worn down. They looked like they weren't going to make that playoff push. He was the focal point of the whole offense. I mean, everybody knows he's by far the most talented guy on that offense, and yet he still had an incredibly strong year and finished it out strong. I mean, just all the way through the end. Just thrilled for him, happy for him, and completely impressed.
Now, Ronan, there's another school of thought that the popular – vote or the public or the media, however you want to frame it, is taking with this award. So there's a candidate out there that you voted for who isn't getting his votes based on an injury. It's something else. So Ronan, who did you vote for and give us that story?
I voted for Geno Smith, quarterback of the Seahawks. And, you know, my interpretation of Comeback Player of the Year award is where were you last year compared to where are you this year, right? And Geno was a backup quarterback last year behind Russell Wilson, not really thought of in any regard as a potential future starter. Everybody just assumed Geno Smith was a backup until he retired, really. And then we went into training camp and everybody had their fun, you know, oh, the Seahawks quarterback battle of Drew Locke versus Geno Smith. That's going to be a tough one, right? And then everybody was kind of surprised that the young guy Drew Locke didn't win it and that Geno Smith was going to go out there and start. And then he lit up the Broncos week one. And then he just kept lighting it up. And then he willed the Seahawks, who everybody was joking about at the beginning of the season, to a playoff berth. And to me, that's as comeback as you can get. What he done in a year span, I don't think any other player has amounted to it. So, Geno Smith, that's why I rolled with him.
I mean, it makes so much sense, and I wish there was an award that I felt correctly described what this was, because we're talking about not a 1 year comeback, not a 2 year comeback, but a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 year comeback where this guy has been a backup quarterback for three different teams. And, you know, similar to what I said about Saquon, like, he was going to be a vet minimum guy and now he's going to get a contract, you know, he's in the same boat. You know, what's a good backup quarterback get? I don't know what salary he was on this year. I mean, it was like chump change. It was like 1 to 2 million for Geno this year, wasn't it? And now we're talking he's going to get somewhere in the 20 to 30 to $35 million range for who knows how long. But I definitely get wanting to award Geno Smith something. For me, though, with comeback, it's like you have to come back from something. Geno was a backup and is now a starter. There wasn't a specific thing, unless you talk about 6 years ago where the dysfunction in New York, he gets punched in the jaw by a teammate and then he never starts again for the team that drafted him. You know, he came back from that, but that was 6 years ago. How much of a comeback is that? To me, the award is there has to be something you overcome specifically. And that usually is tied to an injury. If he had been demoted to a backup for a year, or maybe was even on the same team, that might be a different story. But Ben, where are you at on in terms of what Geno's situation is in terms of comeback player of the year?
Yeah, I would have voted for him had it not been for Barkley. If you take Barkley out of the equation, I would have voted for Geno Smith. So I, you know, Geno Smith surprised me as much as anybody. I thought, hey, if he gets the starting job, he'll compete, but it's a lousy Seahawks roster. Well, they had more spots available field than I realized. And Geno Smith made a lot better throws, especially in the first half of the year, than I thought he would. So I hands down would have voted for Geno. Just Saquon looked so strong throughout the entire year.
Yeah, Geno was incredible. I think you can make the argument, but I think Saquon has that exact argument for what most of us are looking for with the award. Ronan, go ahead and hand out our final regular NFL award. And, you know, good luck with the intro on this one.
Yeah. Hopefully I don't butcher this one. We'll see. You'll be able to tell if it's cut up. But, yeah, we're going to talk about the executive of the year. And this general manager made multiple moves in recent seasons to field a team that tied for the best record in the league. From drafting an MVP caliber quarterback in 2020 to hiring a coach of the year candidate in 2021. Trading three all pros in the 2022 offseason. Trading four, three all pros, not trading them away. The 2022 Phantom Football Podcast Executive of the Year is Howie Roseman of the Philadelphia Eagles. And, you know, as the Eagles make their way into the Super Bowl, this is no surprise. This is probably the best constructed roster in the league. Just in every unit, it seems like they have an absolute animal. Simon, I could start with either of you. Simon, what are your thoughts on Howie Roseman's approach to this 2022 season and overall thoughts on the Eagles?
I mean, they just hit the nail on the head in every aspect. I think for me, what really sold it, because, you know, I was thinking about like the combo of John Schneider and Pete Carroll with the Seahawks, right, who had arguably the best draft class this year. I thought about the Detroit Lions and the drafts that they've had building a good team primarily through the draft leading up to the season. But the fact that Howie Roseman and the Eagles did it from all sides, draft, coaching hires, coaching changes that were necessary, and then making those crude, you know, smart moves in the offseason to trade for A.J. Brown, sign Hassan Reddick, bring in James Bradbury from the Giants and as a cap saving move, just really smart things around the margins and at the most important position at quarterback. And really then you're thinking about it throughout the whole season too, because then Linval Joseph and Ndamukong Suh come in and Suh had you know, kind of the game sealing play at the end of the game today, and just those little things that, you know, don't always produce the results you want, but when you look back on, it's like, hey, there was a key moment there. There was a key moment there, and then when you think about the All Pros and those rotational guys that were brought in this season, Then you really look back on the last couple of seasons. Nick Sirianni has been the perfect fit for them. Jalen Hurts has obviously been the perfect fit for them. And that's all Howie. So I think he's put this team in a great, great position, and he's done it over a couple of years, and he's done it in multiple ways.
Ben, the rest of the league, it seems like, well, maybe not every team, but it seems like the majority of the league is playing Connect Four while the Eagles are playing chess. What are your thoughts on Howie Roseman, what he's been able to do this season?
Yeah, so I voted for Roseman. I'm going to put an asterisk on it, honestly, because, well, to begin with, he did this 5 years ago, right? 2017, he did the exact same thing. Different coach, different quarterback, a few players the same, but largely different roster. But he pieced all that together as well, and you looked at that team, and you're like, good gosh, every unit seems to have something powerful somewhere inside it. So no different this year for the 22 version, just unbelievably impressive. Now, the Eagles do it a different way than the Patriots do it, and the Chiefs do it, and the Steelers do it. Those teams all, they're like pretty staid and steady year in and year out. They want to be the best they can be. The Eagles next year, they've got all kinds of cap issues and all kinds of free agents. And that was true after 2 or 3 years ago as well. So the Eagles kind of play a much riskier, much more complex thing where they kind of spike every 5 years, every 4 or 5 years. It's not the same staid and steady. But this team this year, this 22 version that Roseman has built, is phenomenal. The defensive line, it's just insane. The offensive line is insane. The running backs are good. The wide receivers are excellent. The quarterback is excellent. The secondary is excellent. The linebackers may be the weak part of the team, and they're not bad, you know? I mean, it's just all over the place for this year, this team. Love it. Love what he's done. So if he picks up a second Super Bowl, hats off to him. He did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, to your point, this isn't the first time that he's done it. So it does seem like Howie Roseman will have a job for life. Even if that's not in Philadelphia, I'm sure one of the 31 other teams will give him an opportunity. Does anybody else have anything to throw on to this conversation? No? All right. Well, I think, Ben, it's time to give your award, the Ben Award that has a little bit of our own flavor. We each have our own personal awards to hand out for the end of the season.
Yeah, we did some of this early in the year where we just kind of made up our own thing. And that's what this is. We're each making up an award. My version of this is the biggest surprise of 2022. And I've got 8 candidates with one that the guys talked me into adding on, and rightfully so at the end. So I'll list the candidates and then I'll give you my guy. But biggest surprise of 2022. They're more generic, but Raiders turn out to be awful. Number 2, Broncos turn out to be awful. Number 3, Jeff Saturday in the middle of the season gets hired as a coach. Nobody saw that coming. Number 4, our NFC favorites, the Rams, the Bucks, and the Packers, not only all struggle, but they all 3 have losing records. The Buccaneers managed to get the playoffs because the division was so sorry, but all 3 teams with losing records. Number 5, Geno Smith doesn't just play well, but he's actually talked about as an MVP. Number 6, the Giants don't just play decent. They actually make the playoffs and win a playoff game. Number 7, the Colts turn out to be anemic and rather sick the entire year. Number 8, the Cardinals aren't just dysfunctional part of the year, but they are completely dysfunctional for the entire season. And number 9, the Lions go 9-8. So for me, the winner of the award was the Rams, Buccaneers, and Packers all having losing records. Individually, some of these other things are just as surprising, but the fact it's almost like a 3-team parlay, right? The odds of these 3 things happening together in the same time, that's what made this so statistically unlikely. I did not you could have told me maybe 2 of these teams missed the playoffs, and I would have said, okay, well, they had some injuries, and it just didn't. These 3 teams were just bad kicking off the year. And then some injuries kicked in, especially for the Rams. These 3 teams were not good. They never were good. They never got good. The Packers had a little bit of winning streak, and yet they couldn't win their final game to make the playoffs. So for me, that was the biggest surprise. And, Simon, I'll let you kick in here if you have any other surprises you want to add on or react to any of those. But that was my biggest.
I think that's definitely a good one. I think the other one that really caught my attention was actually the Colts, and really just the Colts in general. This was the team that I got on in our preseason pod and said, like, this could be a dark horse AFC team for the Super Bowl. I thought take the team they had last year and the upgrade of Matt Ryan over Carson Wentz and you'd be good to go. I did not see Matt Pryor at left tackle going as horribly as it went. I did not see Matt Ryan being as bad as it was. I did not see the erratic quarterback decisions throughout the year and then erratic coaching decision coming. If you would have told me at preseason that Jeff Saturday would end up being the head coach of the Colts, I would have thought it was because that they opened an expansion team like one state over and the whole Colts coaching staff went over there and they're like, I don't know what to do. Jeff Saturday, come here. I think the Colts were my biggest surprise, but I think that your pick and the award was also rightfully chosen.
Ronan, anything you want to pile on? Any surprises we didn't mention or one there on the list that pops out for you?
You know, unfortunately, as a Rams fan, the Rams being god awful along with the rest of the NFC favorites were definitely a huge surprise. So I'd have to agree with you, Ben.
All right. Well, that's my made up award. Simon, you got the next one.
Mine is much happier. It's the most improved unit of 2022, and there's so many. I have 12 things listed here. I'm not going to read them all because I want to get as specific as possible because that's what we like to do here. But name any offense or defense that was bottom 10 last year and was top 10 this year. There's so many of them on both sides of the ball. But I also want to focus on specific position groups. So here are the four candidates that I really came down to. Number one, the Giants wide receivers. Isaiah Hodgins comes in and all of a sudden becomes like a pseudo number one for them. And everyone else kind of falls into place. Richie James finds his role. Darius Slayton finds his role. Kenny Galladay becomes a blocking wide receiver, finds his role. So that was much improved throughout the year. Giants defensive backs, they had to play a lot of young guys, a lot of experienced guys early in the year with injuries to guys like Dory Jackson and Xavier McKinney. And then by the end of the season, when those guys were back in their rightful roles, they looked a lot better. The Lions defensive line is my third candidate here. The Lions defense in general, about halfway through the year, right after their bye week, went from being a complete dumpster fire of a defense to being a defense that knew how to pick and choose its spots. And that started up front with rookie Aiden Hutchinson and guys like Aleem McNeil and John Kaminsky really found their roles and found their footing as well. And then this last one here is more of a from last year to this year situation. And that's the Jets defensive backs. We talked about Sauce Gardner already and what he did. DJ Reed also coming over from the NFC side of things, had a very, very good year as well. And compared to the corners that were playing for the Jets last season, guys like Michael Carter, just a much, much better product than we saw last season. But to keep it to this year, the improvement we saw throughout the year, and to keep it to the guys that were on the field throughout the season, I'm going to give this to the Detroit Lions defensive line. I think there's a lot of promise here. I think Aiden Hutchinson had an incredible year. Guy we didn't really mention in defensive rookie of the year, but he's a finalist for, rightfully so. And I think they have something there. And I think the defensive line is where you want to start when you're going to fix the defense, as we talked about with, you know, Nick Bosa in the pass rush. So I think they can build off of it. I really like what they did this season over there in Detroit. Any other notes, any other candidates you want to throw out there or any of those position groups you want to shout out? Ronan, let's start with you.
You know, I don't have really anything honestly to add. I love the Lions defensive line pick. You know, between Hutchinson and Hughes, I wanted to include Hutchinson into my defensive rookie of the year.
Yeah.
You know, but I just had in the back of my head, they're cleanup sacks, and then you know the interceptions. I mean, the dude had more picks than Sauce Gardner this year, right? So, I mean, he's clearly doing something right. And, you know, okay, go ahead and take the one off of him hiding behind whatever he was doing, banking on the quarterback not being able to see him and it somehow worked out. Go ahead and take that one off, and he still had the same amount of picks as him. So, hey, you know, maybe if the whole pass rush thing doesn't work out, he can drop back into the secondary.
Ben, anything else on this board?
Yeah, we're going to have some fascinating rookie conversations during the offseason. But for your list right now today, the Dolphins offense, that really stood out to me. And again, the season didn't end well for them, but at its peak, right, late October, I guess, early November, this offense was on fire, throwing the ball deep, throwing the ball over the middle, to the tight ends, to those wide receivers. They had the ability to run the football. They never really did fully exploit that. And before it, well, in between the injuries to Tua Tagovailoa, man, he was lighting it up. So really love the Dolphins offense there that you have listed also.
All right, and let's see, to wrap up, Ronan, for the final award of the evening.
Yes, sir. So for my award, I wanted to highlight a player, or well, players that balled out in their contract year, right? Contract years, they can get a little bit, there's a lot of tension sometimes, right? Guys are playing for, you know, future money, playing for legacy, playing just to keep their jobs. So to go ahead and dive right into it, the first guy I wanted to highlight was Lamar Jackson. He obviously got injured halfway through the season, or a bit of the way through the season, so we weren't able to see what he was doing or what he was able to do for the entirety, right? We were left kind of wanting more. We didn't get the Lamar Jackson breakout, screw you, give me my money season that we were all kind of hoping for. Maybe not you as much, Simon, as a Steelers fan, but yeah, he proved enough that the Ravens would be relatively screwed without him. They'd have to really, really gain some assets to be able to figure that out. And the next player I want to highlight is Saquon Barkley. We've talked about him a bit. He had himself a phenomenal year. Definitely going to be making a case to get paid. Daniel Jones, quarterback for the Giants. We got two Giants on here already. Nobody expected him to have the year that he did. He didn't do anything, I guess, special, but he did enough to get his team to the playoffs and get his team a playoff win. Josh Jacobs led the league in rushing yards. Very good season. The Raiders didn't pick up his fifth-year option. Going to be really interesting to see where he goes this offseason. So those are my top four candidates. We could dive into, you know, who else. But my selection for the player in contract year that balled out award is Josh Jacobs. And, you know, the dude ran for 1,653 yards. And he also had the third most rushing touchdowns in the league with 12. He also had 93 first downs. Now, going into the season, you know, I think everybody was thinking, all right, Davante Adams, Darren Waller, Hunter Renfrow, right? That wasn't necessarily the case. He was fed the ball a ton this year. And, you know, giving your running back who's going into his last year of his deal the ball a trillion times is kind of backhanded, you know, because he could have potentially had those touches, you know, every other or any other year, right? But now it's the year where he's playing for a contract, but he made the most of it. And it'll be, like I said, really interesting to see how Josh Jacobs navigates through this free agency. Simon, I want to get your thoughts first on Josh Jacobs and his season and, you know, what you think he might be doing this offseason.
Incredible year for Josh Jacobs. You love to see it. I was really worried about what his role was going to be with the new head coach. Really glad he got to showcase his ability. I definitely think it helped himself out in terms of free agency. I'm on Over the Cap right now looking through some, you know, if he had a down season, right? Running backs who are kind of second tier, like backup type running backs, they're making $3 to $5 million. Whereas the top running backs in the league are obviously in the double digits. If you want to talk about the most high paid guys, Alvin Kamara, Ezekiel Elliott, Christian McCaffrey, that's 15 mil and up. The next tier down is in the $12 million range. So he's going to get somewhere between that 12 and 15 mil a year, I think. So I really like that Josh Jacobs pick. I think the other one that I would highlight is Daniel Jones for the same reason. He went from getting backup quarterback money next year, which is again, $5 to $6 million, to, let's face it, starting quarterback money in free agency these days, 30 mil at the floor.
If you go and look at any of these contracts. So I think for that big discrepancy, that big difference, Daniel Jones is a guy that I really like, but Josh Jacobs, I think, makes a lot of sense, especially for the play on the field, actually being, you know, the leading rusher in the NFL versus Jones, who just had starter level production.
Ben, thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree. Jacobs stood out to me as well. You could argue that there have been times over the years that the Raiders have either inconsistently used him or underused him, but he's a weapon. He's a big guy. He's a load. Oh, by the way, he can catch the ball a lot too, not 20 catches a year, but, you know, 40, 50 catches a year. And, you know, I mean, he's a load. He looks durable. He hasn't had injuries that have shut him down the way McCaffrey and Barkley have. So, you know, that bodes well for his next contract. If you're a team thinking about, you know, should we hand money to a running back and is he going to last? You know, if you hand him a 3-year deal, even though it may be a lot of money for that position, we've watched the Patriots hand money to a lot of running backs over the years, not double digit money, but quite a bit of money at the position in some of those years. So he could be a major weapon for a team that especially has hopes of maybe doing some playoff damage next year.
I completely agree. I don't have anything else to add. I don't know if you guys do. I think that wraps it up for my award.
I think that wraps it up for all the awards. So thank you all so much for listening. Ben and Ronan, thank you so much for your guys' votes. Very important stuff. The NFL players and coaches are going to be calling us next year trying to vie for these awards. So great stuff. Great work by you guys as always. I always appreciate it. Thank you again to everybody listening. This has been the Phantom Football Podcast. Make sure you guys come back next week. Make sure you're subscribed to the pod. We're doing a little bit of a different schedule with no Monday night game. So whether we're coming at you Monday mornings or Tuesday mornings, make sure you're just subscribed. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Phantom Football Pod or at Phantom Football. You'll get all the information by doing those two things. And email us with any questions or thoughts at phantomfootballpod@gmail.com. We appreciate it. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.